In this episode of GuideWire, the Fast Tracks team and I have an insightful conversation with Dr. Jessica Stewart from UNC Hospitals about medical technology innovation in the field of vascular interventional radiology.
Welcome to GuideWire, a direct line to medical device innovation. We are the boots on the ground inside of healthcare working to uncover and solve high-impact, unmet medical needs.
Welcome to GuideWire. I'm your host, Devin Hubbard, and today we're joined by Fast Track's team member, Gabe Lee.
Hello.
And our guest today is Dr. Jessica Stewart, a vascular interventional radiologist at UNC Hospitals.
Hi.
Dr. Stewart, thank you so much for joining us today, and we're really excited to talk to you about your experiences with medical device innovation through biodesign, as well as the field of vascular interventional radiology. So, to kick it all off, why don't we give our listeners sort of an overview of what IR is, sort of 10,000-foot view.
Okay, so interventional radiology is a specialty that focuses on minimally invasive procedures to treat a wide variety of disorders. So the idea is that we use image guidance to perform procedures that are mainly based on catheter and wire type interventions through tiny incisions in the skin and watching that with different imaging modalities such as fluoroscopy, which is basically like an X-ray movie machine, or CT, ultrasound, and various imaging types.
That's awesome. Okay. Helpful. Thank you. So I'm sure, like many academic physicians, you kind of wear a lot of hats. So here, I know that you're involved in a couple different things. Do you want to describe a little bit about your role here at UNC Hospitals and some of the other things that you do maybe outside of the hospital as well, really quickly?
Yeah, so I'm in the Department of Radiology here at UNC, and I'm an interventional radiologist specifically. So pretty much all my time is spent doing these procedures and things related to that. So obviously, a big part of my position here is patient care. So here we basically will cover, you know, anything that the inpatients need in the hospital while they're here, from central lines to if they have like a bleed, for instance, we would take care of the bleed by something called embolization, which is blocking off a blood vessel that could be bleeding, for example. I also am the point person for a lot of our women's health interventions. So we minimally treat uterine fibroids, for instance, by cutting off the blood supply to the fibroids using particles that are put into an artery. That's another kind of embolization. So I've kind of built up that service line. I also treat specific other kinds of things like patients with vascular anomalies, kind of helping them to have better quality of life. So I do that with something called sclerotherapy. It's another type of embolization. So those are kind of my clinical interests, but also I'm responsible for teaching residents and fellows, and I'm also involved in a lot of research activities kind of related to these same things. And then obviously getting to work on other cool things, like I'm interested in global health and have been going to Kenya for about 5 years now, actually, both with my previous role at Duke and here at UNC. We're currently trying to help establish the first IR training program for fellows in East Africa, in Kenya, at the University of Nairobi, which is pretty exciting. And also continue to work on device innovation through my partnership with NC Tracks. So a lot of fun things going on.
Yeah, we've had a pretty fun time working with IR in Fast Tracks. So yeah. I think one of the reasons that we're so drawn to IR is because IR has a lot of cool gadgets, but it's also maybe a younger field from the perspective of medical device innovation. And so as a result, we see a lot of opportunity for innovation. And Gabe, I know that you had mentioned in a conversation earlier sort of the differentiation between the types of innovation. I don't know if you want to quickly kind of give a picture for what we had talked about and kind of the types of innovation, because I think that will lead us down the biodesign rabbit hole a little bit, and kind of curious to hear Dr. Stewart's take on innovation in interventional radiology.
Yeah, absolutely. I think before we even go down that road, I think we'd like to hear a little bit more just from Dr. Stewart. One of the things I think that's so cool about IR and something that draws me to it is just kind of the scope of the breadth of procedures that you guys do. So you touched a little bit on it when you were talking about working with vascular abnormalities, working with women's health. But if you want to just give our listeners a little bit more info on just how IR works with the whole body and some examples.
Yeah. So head to toe, it kind of, you know, a lot of specialties will focus on the urinary system or the heart, for instance. IR really does focus on everything. So anything that can be done in a minimally invasive fashion with image guidance. And this is all through very small incisions in the skin, usually just a couple of millimeters. So for instance, yeah, we work in the arteries. So I mentioned a few of the procedures there, but we can treat cancers in that way. People who are bleeding from trauma or from various other pathologies, we do venous work related to work in the veins, trying to open up occlusions or alleviate clot, such as like a pulmonary embolus that could kill somebody. We could try to get that out of there. We work in the biliary system. We do biopsies. We drain abscesses minimally invasively. These are procedures that in parts of the world that don't have IR even today would require a trip back to the operating room and a big abdominal washout rather than, you know, a relatively simple procedure where we can place a drainage catheter into an abscess, which seems simple, but it's a huge deal for people to not have to go back to the operating room. We even ablate tumors using microwave ablation, cryoablation. Basically, we're even treating pain now using cryoablation, like people with phantom limb pain, for instance. Now you can cryoablate nerves to alleviate their pain. So we're kind of moving into the pain control space. Kyphoplasty and plasty of various pathologic fractures to improve quality of life. So really anything you can think of in a minimally invasive fashion. We're even looking at embolization now of the genicular artery in the knee for arthritis-related pain.
Yeah.
So really just kind of push the boundaries using these techniques and applying it to different problems in the body.
Yeah, you guys are everywhere, and that's
everywhere.
Really what's so cool about the specialty.
Yeah, like, what do you not do, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's new all the time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so this, you know, even the knee embolization for arthritis, that's a huge market of patients that need hair. So these are patients who are trying to put off knee replacement, for instance.
Right.
They're in pain. They don't have a lot of good options except for, you know, chronic medications, maybe, you know, steroid injections. So these patients have a clear need there, and so we're trying to kind of fill that need using techniques that we've applied to other areas of the body.
You know, this is maybe a conversation for another time, but what that makes me think of, so on my end of things as a biomedical engineer, right, we're responsible for designing the implants, right? And if I imagine that I'm a younger individual for whom an implant may not last long enough or I have to go back for a revision, that sounds like a perfect place.
Well, everybody tries to put it off as long as they can
because they
have a limited lifespan. So this kind of gives people a good option for those years in between when their pain is pretty severe, but maybe they're still trying to put it off a little
bit. Man, I should go talk to those material scientists and tell them, hey, come on.
Come on now.
Make it less painful and make it last longer.
Do it for me.
That's right.
But also, not only are we helping them to not need the surgery so quickly, this is a more minimally invasive surgery. We're doing this through a pinhole,
right.
You know, in the wrist or in the groin. So
cheaper, faster, safer.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, although it might be more difficult, presumably it's pretty challenging to navigate. And
it is. I mean, the arteries are small, but I wouldn't say it's that much worse than a lot of the other things that we do. So, yeah. Like prostate artery embolization, for instance, is very challenging as well. And it's really coming along and becoming more and more accepted. There's more and more data behind it. So basically, instead of having a more invasive procedure through the urethra, we're going through an artery and embolizing, so stopping the blood flow within the prostate to help it to shrink. So this is for, you know, older men that have benign prostatic hyperplasia and have trouble with lower urinary tract symptoms.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that's a perfect segue into kind of moving into talking about medical device. You've now kind of demonstrated just how much IR is really on the frontier of advancing new procedures and trying out new things. And yeah, when we think of medical device innovation, we kind of think of two large categories or segments. And one of those is kind of the incremental innovation and the other being or improvement on existing technology and the other being kind of the totally novel medical device. And, you know, IR has had its hand in both over the years. I think kind of the most famous example of the novel innovation is Charles Dotter. And so a lot of people don't know this. And you can talk about this, Dr. Stewart, but IR is actually behind the invention of both angioplasty and the balloon expandable stent.
That's right. Yeah. So Charles Dotter, he was a radiologist. He performed the first angioplasty, and this was before we had specialized balloons. So the balloons that we have now, you basically inflate them once you're at the lesion of interest, once you're inside the artery that may have a stenosis. Like in someone with peripheral arterial disease, the artery gets blocked up over time. So basically nowadays, we can go to the site and inflate a balloon at that site. He didn't have balloons back then, so he basically was putting in a dilator through the artery that was the size he wanted to make the artery. So you can imagine it was a much bigger hole in the artery where he was accessing, and you're kind of cramming this dilator through there. You could shower kind of distally. So there were a few problems with it, but basically that was the concept, is that we can open up these vessels from the inside. And that was groundbreaking, and that was eventually, you know, translated to cardiologists use this now. I mean, it's the basis of basically all endovascular therapies. And this was a radiologist who just thought, hey, can I put this through an artery and open it up?
Yeah.
And he also came up with the concept of the balloon expandable stent, which came around later. But, you know, these catheters and wires and things, they didn't really exist back then. So he was kind of starting with what he had. But this was, you know, groundbreaking for medicine overall and kind of minimally invasive treatments of many different diseases.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, I mean, I don't know if many of our listeners will have known that IR was sort of the inventor of those particular medical... I mean, you think of stents and you may not be thinking of IR to begin with,
IR,
right?
Well, IR has maybe a PR problem. so we're kind of like the assassins behind, or the ninjas behind the...
maybe not assassins.
Behind the scenes. Yeah.
You're like...
Yeah.
Carefully subverting medical practice through the innovation of brand new technologies.
I mean, so we just, you know, since we don't kind of have the face of like cardiology, for instance, everybody with a heart problem goes to see a cardiologist. So since we do work all over the body, there's pros and cons to that. And that's that we don't only treat one patient population, kind of all kinds of people come to us. So, but we kind of like that. It gives us variety. It lets us be really nimble and kind of, you know, transition to different things. IR has like a joke. It's interventional radiology, inventing procedures for other specialties since 1973.
Yeah, it sounds
pretty
like
much.
It. That's so funny.
But we're okay with that. We like the new and the interesting.
Yeah.
So,
So Dr. Zero, I mean, that was an example of a pretty groundbreaking innovation. But I think, as Gabe pointed out earlier, there are plenty of examples, I think, as well, of sort of more incremental innovation. Mm-hmm, and even before we started recording, we were just having a casual conversation about, you know, incremental can be as simple as doing something in the procedural suite with an existing technology, like bending a needle.
Yeah.
Can you guys, I mean, both of you are sort of more savvy in the realm of IR than I am. So I'm curious to hear both of your thoughts on those types of innovations and kind of how they come about. And then where I'm headed with this is I'd like to understand kind of which is more frequent and or more appealing to you, perhaps, Dr. Stewart. And then that can segue a little bit into our work with you already from the fast track side of things. Curious to hear it.
Yeah, obviously, I think incremental innovation is probably more common than something that kind of blows up the field entirely. Mm-hmm. So one example that I've seen kind of over many years in IR is a device that's called an IVC filter. So you guys have heard about these on the late night lawyer commercials.
You know, what's interesting about IVCs is there's a really interesting case study of it in the biodesign book itself.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I bet there is.
Anyway.
So, I mean, this started way back in the day where, you know, folks who had DVT, deep vein thrombosis, were dying of PE. So they tried to find a way to kind of stop these clots from getting to the lungs. So actually, they started off with surgically ligating the IVC, which had issues with that. Eventually, they came up with permanent filters, which was basically based on a design, I think, from like an oil manufacturing where they, you know, someone was like, well, why don't you just put a filter and like we do to keep junk out of the, you know, the engine or whatever it was. So basically there were permanent filters. They had some issues with basically causing thrombosis of the veins underneath. And that's still an issue that we struggle with some of the designs today. So moving forward, we've moved more towards basically designing filters that can be removed and don't get so incorporated into the wall of the IVC. And even some folks now are even working on filters that can be converted, basically switched from a filtering to a non-filtering position, or even dissolve over time. So basically, it's just been incremental changes in the design that can kind of lessen complications, make them easier to remove. So, and there's like probably 10 filters at least on the market in the U.S. right now that have different designs.
My question, I think, is who's doing that innovation? Is that, are those physicians that are sort of like, man, you know, I wish this blank, like, it did this?
Yeah.
Or is that like,
I mean,
a company
thing,
or is it both?
A lot of them are physicians collaborating with companies, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and you might have noticed a lot of our catheters are like named after certain physicians and things. So I think a lot of these physicians were collaborating with different medical device companies.
Right. I mean, that's kind of how we operate, right, in Fast Track. So, like, I mean, we're a little different in that I think a larger company already has a portfolio in mind and maybe more appropriate to do incremental work on their existing technologies for so many reasons, like regulatory reasons, beyond.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot
of them may have patents that kind of cover a lot of the things that maybe you want to do. So I think it makes sense to work with them in a lot of cases.
And then there's kind of like what we're doing with Fast Tracks. And I know earlier in the week we did a sprint with you guys. And I was not there, but Gabe, you were there, I think, right?
Gabe ran it.
I ran it, and that's why it was a disaster.
Such negative feedback.
Yeah, I mean, in our weekly meeting this week, we just tore it apart. I mean,
we're throwing that one out.
Next
time.
That's right. No, but I mean, it was interesting because I, having not been there, I saw a lot of big ticket problems that kind of arose. But I mean, that's just a comment about the way that
we
run
stuff. I think there
were
some incremental ones and some big ticket ones. So I think one of the popular incremental ones was like, can we have, please, a better way to declog G-tubes at the bedside? And this is interesting. It was coming. You could really see like kind of which providers were kind of focused on this. So a lot of the folks were like our advanced practice providers and our residents who are like boots on the ground trying to declog these tubes at the bedside. So they're like really thinking about this stuff a lot.
Absolutely.
Whereas I think some of us who are like the attendings are more focused on like higher, like different kind of more difficult problems. So it's interesting. It's like whatever every user's experience is so different. It's kind of like what's their top of the mind kind of problem that they're dealing with on the day to day.
Yeah. Gabe, you sound like you're about to say something or want to say
something. I'm bursting. I'm ready.
Go for it.
Let's hear it.
No, I think one thing that's interesting about what you just talked about with all of these innovations in IR, especially with incremental stuff, is that a lot of it comes from a physician who's done this procedure many, many times, sees an unmet clinical need, and then is, you know, industrious or motivated enough to try to pursue a solution. And the way that we've approached it with this sprint, and for those who are listening, the sprint is kind of just this method that we co-opted from Silicon Valley to try to figure out where there are unmet needs. It's a little bit of a different process, right? Because traditionally you have a doctor who finds an unmet clinical need kind of serendipitously, and then it goes about solving it. Right. Whereas we are actually engaged in an exercise with a bunch of you guys and saying, let's kind of think about what's going on and make a list of unmet clinical needs. And how do you think that process, the different approach, is kind of going to play out? Or how do you feel about how it's going?
I mean, I think I actually really like this sprint format. I mean, so I mean, I went through the traditional kind of biodesign process when I was a student at Stanford. And so basically, they were starting out kind of how you guys did initially, which was a lot of observation, shadowing time, and kind of trying to observe, you know, problems as they arise kind of in the operating room or in the IR suite. I think that's just very time consuming. I think that's fine. And I think you could probably identify a lot that way, but I think it could take many months. And maybe you don't even still like kind of get down to the nitty gritty of what's really bothering people on the day to day or what really needs solving. So I think kind of mining for like clinical needs that are really frustrating to us or really something that comes up often, then I think that's a very efficient way to do it.
And we started off shadowing. And I think one of the problems we quickly identified was, you know, the engineering team, it doesn't make sense for, you know, us to sit in a room and try to learn about the procedure and then identify the need when you, the doctor, are doing them every day. And you are already aware of what needs to be.
And it's tough because there's, you know, there's a lot of knowledge that's like, we can't explain every single step. And so I think a lot of it is kind of wasted time when you don't really even know like what's happening. And
yeah, I agree. In fact, I have there's sort of on both sides, right? Like there's information, I won't say gaps, but differences in our perspective. Like as an engineer, I have in my head, and especially and we're lucky to work with you because you have experience with the biodesign process, but the average provider that we work with has no experience or very limited experience in innovation and product development. So when we go in and we're looking for unmet needs, what we define as an unmet need is so different than what most folks do. We get a lot of sort of like, well, I wish this was faster, or more often we'll see something like, this is an inconvenience, or, you know, computers are a problem. And it's just sort of like, what do I do with that? So there's an interesting balancing act that I've sort of run into where we have to educate each other on what we're both trying to communicate and get out of it. But it's also important for me as the person who's kind of coming into your domain of expertise to convey like, hey, I appreciate that some of these problems I may not be able to solve, right? And it's without turning somebody off completely, especially if they're going to be a partner, I find that it can be a little difficult to navigate that sometimes. I guess what I'm saying is it would be helpful in a perfect world if everybody had training in biodesign or some innovation. I think that's one of the reasons that observation, the traditional technique, takes so long, right? Because not only am I looking for a very specific thing when I'm in there, but also I don't know the language, as you point out, right? Like I have to go back and after I observe, I have to like unpack all that. And that takes a long time. So That's one of the reasons that the sprint is something that we've been piloting recently as a way to mine for those kinds of problems.
Yeah, I think it's very efficient. And I think a lot of times the physician maybe doesn't even know like what you guys can offer,
right.
Maybe what your areas of expertise are and like what's possible or what's worth focusing on. So I think, you know, sometimes they need direction as well, like on how to best optimize, you know, their collaboration with you guys.
Yeah, you're right.
And Dr. Stewart, I think I'd like to get your perspective on this. So as a current medical student, you know, we don't have anything in our curriculum geared towards, you know, biodesign. Mm-hmm. I think there's actually a new medical school that just opened at University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, that's geared towards engineers coming.
Oh, great.
So probably more towards the biodesign stuff.
That's so cool.
I don't think I knew that.
But you, Dr. Stewart, are unique because you are an engineer. And so kind of being part of the process of biodesign, working with now a team of engineers and your team of physicians, but kind of having your foot in both camps, do you think that, how has that kind of background informed your ability to do this? And then do you think that that should be integrated into medical education?
Well, I'm biased. Of course, I think it should. But really, it's just a problem-solving mentality, I would say. So, you know, not being kind of glued to how things have been done before and kind of thinking of, like, new ways to approach. I think it's more of a way of thinking more than anything, you know, specific. But, yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up because as an engineering educator myself, that speaks to my my soul. But it's interesting. I feel like, man, we could talk about this all day. So maybe I'll table that for another time. But yeah, I mean, so we've heard a little bit about IR and kind of the types of innovation, what we've been working on with Fast Tracks and IR here at UNC. But now I want to, let's put on our like magician hats for a minute.
I don't think I have one of those.
Oh, well,
is this like
I'll
a sorting
have to lend
hat
you mine.
Or...
Yeah, it's actually very similar.
Okay. Gryffindor.
instead of sorting, it just tells us what technologies you look for. So here, this one's for Dr. Stewart. So imagine we gave you a magic wand here to create some new technology, maybe a new medical device. Think devices here, not like fix my computer, right? Which I hear all the time.
You know,
I understand.
I won't say that.
But imagine, you know, like medical technology kind of stuff. Like, what problems would it solve in IR? Like, in your practice, what do you feel are the most urgent unmet needs or urgent problems that people should be looking at? Even if there's no solution right now, or we don't necessarily need to hear a solution.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the ones that comes to mind immediately is problems with implanted devices, kind of restenosis of these devices. So there are drug-eluting stents, for instance, but they've been shown recently that some may have an increased mortality over 5 years. So there's issues there, but also just like the way that arteries and veins respond to having these devices in over time, they don't like it.
Is this like a mostly stents then we're talking
mostly
about?
Mostly stents, but also just like, for example, patients with dialysis access, they will run out of accesses over time because of venous stenosis. And so this is a death sentence if they run out of access, for instance. So that's one problem that I think folks have been trying to solve and figure out for many years.
Can we do anything about some of that stuff already?
Well, some of it, but...
anyway, that's really interesting.
So, for example, the drug-eluting stents, sure, but it's like, you know, basically there's hemodynamic changes that I think cause changes in the veins and things. So it's like, how do you help a vein get used to being an arterial pressure, for instance?
Do you, from your perspective, do you feel like the problem is more that we don't understand the problem?
Yes.
Or that, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like basic science work that needs to be done around that.
Maybe
whatever is like precipitating these changes could be targeted in some way. So that's a big problem. Yeah, there's so many things, but
that's a new one to me. Oh, now I'm gonna go look this up.
Thinking
so the
about
never,
that,
the
that's
never
like,
closing stent is your magic wand wave production.
Yeah, I mean that'd be a good one.
The never closing stent.
Yeah, that'd be a nice one. But there's many, many others.
Oh, that's fascinating. Sure. That's an interesting.
Maybe
one
Maybe also
ponder.
Like minimally invasive monitoring of different things, so you don't have to put them through another procedure to find out if something like a TIPS is closing down. I think someone was actually looking at that at like minimally invasive monitoring of like portal venous pressure that could be, you know, sent to your smartphone or something like that. So I think there's a lot of room for things like that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's helpful. Well, thanks, Dr. Stewart, for taking time to help us understand your experiences in design and in interventional radiology. Thank you, Gabe, for joining us.
Of course.
As always, if you'd like to learn more, you can visit us at guidewire.unc.edu. And if you haven't already, please consider subscribing to the Guidewire podcast on your favorite streaming service. You've been listening to Guidewire, and I'm your host, Devin Hubbard, and we'll talk to you next time.
Learn more about our exciting activities, opportunities, and team by subscribing to the Guidewire podcast on your favorite listening service.
If you have identified an unmet medical need or are interested in learning more about our process, visit us at guidewire.unc.edu. You have been listening to Guidewire, a direct line to medical device innovation.